Good morning, everyone. Today we're just going to review the current status of the epidemiology.
I'm overlooking the Strategic Health Operations Center here at the World Health Organization, and this is the nerve center for the Ebola outbreak. They're having their morning meeting, and they're getting updates about new cases of Ebola that are popping up each day around the world.
We have big problems in Guinea-Conakry. We have today 2 new confirmed cases, but 25 new suspected cases. And
BBC World Service, I'm Simon Cox with Ebola, What Went Wrong? 7 months after the outbreak started, the virus still has the upper hand, and it's spreading. This latest epidemic has killed far more people than all the previous outbreaks put together.
If the international community had mobilised effectively earlier on in this epidemic, we wouldn't be where we are here today. Basically, this failure to act has had catastrophic consequences for West Africa and potentially for other countries in the region or elsewhere.
Each day, there's a new twist in this epidemic, but one question has remained constant. Could and should this have been stopped earlier?
I got the virus through my dad. My dad was sick and I did not know that it was Ebola virus.
Yusuf is one of the more than 9,000 people in West Africa who've been infected with Ebola, and each day this figure increases.
And when we went to the hospital, they took his blood, and when the test came out, it was positive. In fact, the test came out when he had died, and they conducted the burial ceremony. And after his death, then I started having the signs and symptoms.
What were they?
I had constant fever, high fever, body pains, and then after some time I started vomiting and had frequent stool.
What was it like when you had all those things happening to you?
It was terrible. In fact, you see death, because the fever that it gives you, it is very, very high. It is really, really deadly.
And it must have been difficult for you if your father died from it as well. That must have been very hard.
Oh, yes, truly speaking, I lost 8 family members, including my dad. And for now, we are only 3 survivors.
Yusuf is the first survivor from the Connaught, Freetown's main hospital in Sierra Leone, where it spread after its original outbreak late last year.
December the 6th, 2013. 2-year-old boy in Guinea dies after a mysterious fever.
March the 21st, 2014. Guinea informs the World Health Organization of an Ebola outbreak. Official death toll, 59.
Ebola isn't new, but this is the first time it's been in West Africa. Previous outbreaks have tended to be in Central Africa, where the virus was discovered almost 40 years ago.
These are all photos here, aren't they? These are from when?
From 1976, yes, in Yamboko, yes.
And how big was that outbreak in 76?
There were about slightly over 300 cases, and 90% died, so close to 300 people died. That was the first known outbreak.
Professor Peter Piot is director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He was a member of that first scientific team that arrived in what was then Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo.
There were 3 sisters, missionaries, and a Catholic priest who had locked themselves up basically in the guest house, and they were waiting to die. And they had put a cord around their, you know, the guest house, attached to a tree, and with a message in Lingala, which I don't speak. It said, "Don't come near, we're all gonna die, leave a message here." And they were convinced, they were praying in that sense. So I came there, I was 27, and jumped over that cord and said, "Hi, you know, I'm Peter Piot, and we're coming to help you." And they all started crying and so on. It was,
What happened to them? Did any of them survive?
All of them survived, but they had already lost 4 nuns died and 1 father died, you know. And that's why they were convinced they were next. But it was the nuns who worked in the hospital, they all died. As is the case now in West Africa, it's nurses and doctors are the front line and they die. And then it was 11 out of 17 hospital staff died from Ebola.
In the 4 decades since, there have been 1,500 deaths in at least 25 Ebola outbreaks. Then came this one.
March the 31st, Liberia confirms 2 cases of Ebola. Official death toll in West Africa, 82.
At this stage in March 2014, the medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, had already been working in the region for months. They've been there throughout, on the front line, running the treatment centres, trying to control this epidemic in West Africa.
To deal with this every day, to look people in the eye, you can see they are scared to look at the patients, and you know that their chances are very small. And it's horrible.
But by the end of March, just a week after the first cases were confirmed in Guinea, MSF noticed that this was different to previous outbreaks.
We've been working in Ebola outbreaks for over 20 years, and this was the first time that we were seeing it spread so quickly.
Christopher Stokes is head of the MSF operation in Brussels, the centre for their Ebola response.
So we raised the alarm bell very early on, March, April, and we used one word that's since been used ad nauseum. We called it unprecedented. We were very concerned about the risk of it spreading to urban areas. Ebola had usually happened in very isolated forest areas in parts of Congo, for example, and the spread was hampered in a way by the natural terrain, the isolation of the villages. But the potential for it to spread in West Africa was much greater. And there's a lot of trade and commerce and people move between the three countries, and that's exactly what unfortunately has happened.
When you were first saying this back in March, April, what was the response you got?
So initially, West African governments downplayed the epidemic. The main reaction was some kind of denial, basically, of Ebola. Remember, this was the first time that they'd faced this disease in their countries. And this hampered, slowed down the initial response. But also, international institutions didn't respond and even wished to downplay, particularly WHO, of course, as is now well known and on record, downplayed the scale of this early on in the epidemic.
He's referring to several tweets sent by the World Health Organization's main spokesman, Greg Hartle, on April the 1st, questioning MSF's claim that the outbreak was unprecedented, a point Greg Hartle drove home in a press briefing that day.
Ebola already causes enough concern. We need to be very careful about how we characterize something which is, up till now, an outbreak with sporadic cases. What we are dealing with is limited geographic area and only a few, let's say, chains of transmission.
Well, we went to see them in Geneva and told them that they were seriously mistaken and that they needed to scale up their response quite strongly and give proper advice to the states. And basically what you've seen is a kind of international failure of any form of coherent, organised response for the first 6 months of this epidemic.
May the 26th, the World Health Organization confirms Sierra Leone's first Ebola deaths. Total confirmed Ebola deaths in West Africa, 203.
2 months into the outbreak, the response was led by the WHO's Africa office.
July the 25th, Nigerian Ministry of Health reports first death from Ebola. Total deaths now stand at 672.
She lasted for a week and 4 days, then eventually she died.
Dennis's pregnant wife, Justina, was a nurse who helped to treat an American citizen with Ebola who travelled from Liberia to Nigeria. She contracted the virus on her first day in the job.
Each day I go to the house, I end up crying. There was nobody to come around, to cheer me up, to advise me. I was just in it alone.
He had to take time off to care for Justina, and he was fired from his job at an oil company.
The last day I saw her, her legs were swollen. One part of her tummy was also swollen. And the following day, I came to the hospital. I learned she had died.
You got ill as well?
Yes. Before she passed on, I have started having my own symptoms. I became dehydrated, and I had to call the Nigeria Ebola response team, who actually came to my house and they checked my temperature, and they found out that my case was actually getting out of hand. So it was just 2 days after I buried her, that was when I was taken into the isolation centre.
Dennis survived by getting to hospital early, where one of the doctors treating him was Simon Mardell, a hospital consultant from Manchester. He's had years of experience dealing with Ebola and other similar hemorrhagic fevers. And it wasn't experimental drugs that saved Dennis, but something far simpler and cheaper.
People should hydrate orally using oral rehydration salts, because this has always been about fluids. Drink, drink, drink. You've got to drink 4 litres at least of this fluid a day, it's the best chances of survival.
Dr. Mardell was commissioned by the World Health Organization to write a report on the outbreak in Guinea, which he completed in June, but which hasn't been made public. The BBC has seen the findings, which said the outbreak was unique, and set out a series of recommendations. The most important was to warn people in West Africa not to take anti-inflammatory tablets like ibuprofen, as they're known to make fevers like Ebola worse. Other recommendations included telling people to use oral rehydration solutions and to provide buckets, not just the bleach, for people caring for relatives. With the simple things like providing buckets, oral rehydration, have they happened?
No, they haven't, and not on the scale that I would like. And the care and the response outbreak, it's very often fragmented nowadays with so many people involved, so many organisations, that there is not the leadership that has that level of detail in front of it to be able to make those decisions. That leadership has been lacking.
Growing anger about the response came to a head during a meeting in June between the World Health Organization and the steering committee of the Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network, a group of 300 international organizations that help the WHO deal with disease outbreaks. We've spoken to a senior member of the committee who was at the meeting. He said the WHO was lambasted for its response, which was called an absolute disaster, and the point was driven home that it had to pull its finger out. A letter was then sent by the steering committee to the WHO's director general. And in July, the headquarters in Geneva took over control of the Ebola outbreak response.
August the 8th. The World Health Organization declares the Ebola outbreak an international emergency. Official death toll, 961.
Why do you think it took the World Health Organization all those months to then finally declare that it was this international emergency?
I think there's a mix of reasons why WHO responded slowly.
Professor Peter Piot, director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
First of all, it's a very decentralized organization, and its office in Africa is really not up to the task. And I hope that this epidemic will lead to some serious reform, attracting competent people and trying to get away of political appointees and so on. That's one point. So they should have been the front line for that. They didn't do their job. And then in WHO headquarters, the budget for the hemorrhagic fevers division or unit and also for the outbreak department was cut.
It was a massive cut of over $250 million. That's over half of its budget. And a lot of key staff went too. We've spoken to a former senior member of the outbreak response team who dealt with previous Ebola outbreaks. He was scathing about the WHO's response. There'd been too much talking and not enough doing, he said, and that someone was asleep at the wheel and should be held to account. He summed up the response as completely unacceptable, adding that the decision to slash such a huge amount from the outbreak response department was like a local council getting rid of its fire service.
August the 28th. The WHO warns more than 20,000 people could die from Ebola by early November. Official death toll now 1,552.
The daily Ebola meeting has just finished here in the Strategic Health Operations Centre in the heart of the WHO. We heard about new cases from Guinea, which people here were saying were very worrying. Also updates from Spain, Germany and the US. Clearly the organisation has ramped up its response to this. But how does it answer this criticism that this has all come months too late? Rick Brennan is one of the directors who's in charge of the response to the Ebola outbreak.
We all could have done better. We all could have responded faster. But having said that, this outbreak is very different from anything we've seen before as well. I think that the pace at which this outbreak picked up, its geographic spread, caught everyone, even the experts, by surprise. And now we need to redouble or treble our efforts to play catch up.
You say it caught everyone by surprise, but Médecins Sans Frontières was saying in March, April, this is an unprecedented outbreak. WHO then briefed against them and said they were causing panic and alarm.
Well, when I say it caught people by surprise, I think in terms of the rate at which it escalated, the geographic spread, we've never had an outbreak of Ebola that's affected more than one country. And then the fact that it's got into an urban setting. And that has really contributed to the spread.
But the responses I've had, I was talking to someone who was very senior here until recently and said the response was completely unacceptable and it was hard to believe how you'd responded. That's quite damning, isn't it?
That's tough. I will say that in retrospect, there are a number of things that we could have done better. I think we could have perhaps engaged the governments more sooner. I think that we could have brought communities on board more effectively sooner. And I think we could have brought on board a broader range of partners a little bit better.
What about the cuts to the outbreak response department? Over $200 million had come out of the budget. Has that made much of a difference, do you think?
Well, I mean, when you lose capacity, when you lose experts, it's obviously going to have an impact in your ability to respond in a timely manner. So we're looking seriously at how we restructure moving forward. But again, I mean, I think that our donors, our member states, have to be looking at that as well. There is a lot of reflection on that and a recognition that there have to be improvements in our procedures and in our capacities.
It's not just the World Health Organization that needs to change. It's funded by the 190 states in the UN, and during the financial crisis, donor countries decided to significantly reduce the WHO's budget. Dr. Jeremy Farrar, director of the Global Medical Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, says the outbreak has called into question the way that member states support the WHO.
Got to bear in mind that the World Health Organization is a secretariat of the member states. And if the member states don't contribute sufficiently, we will get a substandard organisation.
And all of these countries are supposed to have health systems that can cope with public health emergencies. But many of the poorest nations in West Africa say they simply don't have the money to do it. Britain has given tens of millions of dollars to help with this. But last year, the UK government reduced its aid to Liberia and Sierra Leone by almost 20%. A report earlier this month from a British parliamentary committee said these cuts had hampered the fight against Ebola. A view shared by Dr. Jeremy Farrar from the Wellcome Trust.
We will spend huge amounts of money now in Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea. We would have spent less if we'd invested in the health systems before they collapsed. You'll always spend money when you play catch up. So this will cost us a lot more, and it'll cost the countries in West Africa a lot more, because we've neglected that area.
But even when they do get the money, they don't necessarily spend it. The European Union has given $60 million to improve Liberia's health system. But in the last 2 years, just $4 million of that reached Liberia's health department. Lewis Brown is the country's information minister. What about the criticism of your government that actually you didn't do enough and you weren't quick enough to deal with it, because there are certain things that you could have done even with your stretched health system?
Well, we like to hear what we could have done better or properly. We'll be glad to listen when this is all over. The folks lying down as we speak and those who've been projected to contract this, I'm not sure that's the kind of argument they're ready to listen to right now. What we're ready to do is to figure out how we get more treatment centers open, as well as how we can continue to ramp up public awareness. If we can operate on these two tracks, quite clearly, we should be able to get a hold on this. We'll save the Monday morning quarterbacking for when the game is over.
Well, one of the criticisms is that the EU gave $60 million to the health sector there, and that only $4 million of it had actually gone to the health ministry in the last 2 years.
Well, I don't have that information. What I do know is that we've had a broken down, extremely collapsed system. health sector, when you appreciate that our country, as a result of the years of devastation and our conflict, actually experienced the greatest collapse in the productive sector of any economy since World War II, 90% collapse. That is why it is extremely important that we get all the help we can get, and we get it now.
September the 8th, the British government announces the building of a treatment centre in Sierra Leone. Official death toll, 2,296.
September the 16th, President Obama announces 3,000 military personnel to be sent to West Africa. Death toll, 2,461.
September the 30th, first case of Ebola in the US is announced. Death toll, 3,338.
As the virus spreads to other countries, many of the experts we spoke to believe the only way to contain the current outbreak is with a vaccine to stop people getting infected in the first place. One of these is being developed by the pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline. It's trying to shrink the 10 years it normally takes to complete trials into just 12 months. Ripley Ballou is in charge of the project at GSK's Vaccine Research Unit outside Brussels.
We did discuss with the WHO, and they were very appreciative that we were sharing our information with them. If you go back now to the spring, there really was no vaccine policy. No one anticipated that we would need a vaccine. So both internally and I think at the WHO, we felt that the best approach was to watch very closely, to begin to prepare, but not to pull the trigger until it was obvious that we would need to do something. I think in retrospect, we should have pulled that trigger earlier, but it is what it is, and we are working very closely with WHO. There shouldn't be any finger pointing around this. I mean, this is a tremendous international effort to try to respond to an unprecedented problem.
But didn't they then come back in the summer and say, okay, we do need a vaccine?
They did. They came to us in August and said, what can you do to accelerate this?
We asked the World Health Organization about this, but they didn't respond. In the next phase of the trial, GSK hoped to have 20,000 doses ready for testing on health workers by the beginning of next year. But what about the millions of people in West Africa at risk of the disease?
To have a vaccine that people can use, you have to have the vaccine registered, and it has to be manufactured at a scale that is consistent with the intended use. And that is going to be well into next year, if not the year beyond, before we have that kind of level of manufacturing and the actual data that's necessary. You're right, a vaccine is going to come too late for this epidemic. But what we can do during this epidemic is to gather the data that the vaccine works. And if it does work, then to be able to be prepared so that we don't have to go through this again in 5 years or whenever the next epidemic is going to break out.
October the 5th, Sierra Leone has its highest death toll in a day, with 120 dead. Total outbreak death toll, 3,439.
October the 6th. Spanish nurse becomes the first person to be infected with Ebola outside of West Africa.
October the 8th. American man being treated for Ebola in Texas dies. Official death toll, 3,865.
After a sluggish start, the World Health Organization is now fully engaged. But with no drugs or vaccine, it's left to the initiative of West Africans and the courage of health workers to try and stop the inexorable spread of Ebola. Rick Brennan, Director of Emergency Response at the WHO, says even now, after all the dire warnings, they're still well short of what they need to get on top of the disease.
At present, we believe we need 50 Ebola treatment centres across the three main affected countries. Currently, of the 50 that we believe we need, we have 16 operational. Now, of the other 34 that will be established, we only have partners identified for another 9. So in the next few weeks, we'll have 25 of these up and running.
So you need another 25 hospitals and for them to be staffed. And
correct.
You haven't had that commitment as yet.
Correct, yeah.
But we have known for months, haven't we? For months we've been told, you declared it an emergency in August.
Right.
We're now into October.
Right.
And so, still, we're nowhere near the amount of things you need.
Correct. So everyone could have moved faster.
And however fast they're moving now, they'll always be playing catch-up.
October the 12th. An American nurse becomes the first person to contract Ebola in the US. Latest death toll, 4,024.
The WHO says it's now the worst health emergency of the modern era. After all the promises, help is finally arriving. Britain has set up a hospital in Sierra Leone and sent military staff to run it. MSF were there at the beginning and have been a constant presence in the field hospitals in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. So how long does Thomas Kneeler, president of MSF in Geneva, think this Ebola outbreak will last? The answer's one you probably don't want to hear.
We estimate, at least in our planning and budgeting, that the outbreak will last until end of 2015 or early 2016, which is another 18 months.
That long?
That long, but as the situation is today, we really have to plan for the long term. And I think the world has to be shaken, heavily shaken, in order to develop mechanisms which will help to save lives all over the world, not only in Europe, not only in the United States, not only in emerging countries, but as well in the poorest countries of this world.
October the 20th. The World Health Organization declares the Ebola outbreak in Nigeria over, but still out of control in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. Latest official death toll, 4,555.
And counting. I'm Simon Cox. Ebola, What Went Wrong, was produced by John Murphy. The war.